Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back. Today is Daf Yomi Ksubos Daf Pei Gimel. We begin a brand new perek, perek HaKosev. Says the Mishnah right on top, HaKosev Lirshtei. As we learned in the previous perek, typically a husband would have access to his wife's Nichsei Melugdos assets, which belong to her. She brings it in with herself to the marriage. Principal belongs to her. Peiros, fringe benefits, income, produce, go to the husband. Why? This is an exchange for his commitment to redeem her if she goes into captivity. So he gets the peiros. And actually, there are three aspects to his benefits in terms of nichsei meluk. Number one, peiros. Number two, she cannot sell that property and circumvent her husband's rights. She can't do mechira. Number three, if and when she passes away, those actual assets are inherited by him, by the husband. So peiros, yerusha, and his ability to block her sale, her selling the properties. She has no right of sale. Says the Mishnah, HaKosev Liishtei. So it's pre-marriage, and he's committing to his future wife in writing. You can keep those nichsei meluk. Dinu dvarim ein li benichosayich. I have no claims or interests in your properties. I'm disengaging. You can keep that. He'll still be able to have the peiros during her lifetime. And likewise, when she passes away, he gets those properties. So what did he accomplish by promising her? Din udvarim ein li b'nechasayich. Im kein lama kosev la din udvarim ein li b'nechasayich. If that's the case, he gets the peiros and the yerusha. What good does it do that he promises her that he's disengaging and backing away from those properties? The answer is, there is one thing that she now got. Should she sell it or give it away, the sale stands. So he gave that away. He started with three aspects of benefit. You can't sell. I get Paris, I get Yerusha. He gave away the right of sale aspect. You can sell. And the Gemara will explain why he only gave up that right. In the next case we have a fellow who stipulates a bit further. He's more detailed in his forfeiture. Kosovlo, he writes to her, Dinudvarim, Eini b'nichsayich ube peiroseyan. I am backing off from your properties and from any produce produced from that field. In this case, he gave up the peiros. Hareze eino ichel peiros b'chayya. He cannot access the peiros during her lifetime. And this is on top of the fact that she can sell this property. But he only gave up two out of three benefits. Yerusha, he still retains. Vim meso yerusha, if she dies, he keeps the yerusha. He never gave that up. And soon we'll see that in the next case, when he actually stipulates and details further, he'll give up even that. But let's pause for a second. In this case, case number two, he gave up Nechasim and Peris. Okay, he forfeits Peris as well. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda says, La'olam oichel peri peris. True, he gave up, first generation produce, the actual fruit growing on that field, the profits coming from that asset, that he gave up. But peri peris, you know what that is? That's the second generation profits. You take the fruit and reinvest it into property. The property produces more peiros. That's called peirei peiros, the offspring, so to speak, of the first peiros. That he can still access. He didn't give that up. He only gave up peiros, not peirei peiros. Achi yichtavlo, unless he actually stipulates that as well, and he says, "Dinu dvarim, I have no claims or interests in your properties at all." Ein li b'nechasayich, ube perisein, that's first generation produce, ube perisein, second generation income, ad olam, all the way down the line. Here comes case number three. He writes to her as follows. Kasavla. Dinu dvarim ein li b'nechosayich. Okay. Ube peter seyin. Okay. Ube peter peter seyin. B'chayeich u'b'moyseich. Throughout your lifetime and after your passing. So now he's giving up even more than before. What's the result? He loses all three benefits. Eina eichel peres b'chaya. He no longer derives the peres throughout her lifetime. And on top of that, v'imeisa eino yoisha. Should she pass away, he doesn't get that property. And of course, she certainly has the right to sell that property. That applied even in the first case of the Mishnah. So here he lost all three benefits. She has right of sale. He doesn't get the peres, nor is it something that he's going to be yirish. Rabban Shimon Gamliel Leimer, no, Yerusha cannot be cancelled. That's an absolute halacha. You can't negate that. Imeisa Yerushena, if she passes away, he takes her properties. Vipnesha Masna Amasha Kasa B'Torah, because otherwise he's stipulating against the halacha in the Torah. Because according to him, the din that a husband is yirish, his wife is min haTorah, that cannot be shut down. V'chala Masna Amasha Kasa B'Torah, whoever attempts to condition against halacha and the Torah, tanoi bottle, it doesn't work, the condition is null and void. Ta'ani Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya had a different girsa. The Mishnah began with the words ha'kosev li'ishta. He actually committed in writing to his wife. No, you don't need that. Ha'imer li'ishta. Even if he just verbally expressed that commitment, it has the same halacha. Let's keep in mind that he's not really doing a kinyan. He's just promising, he's stipulating in advance of the marriage. So it really makes no difference whether he's saying it or writing it. It's all the same thing. Asks the Gemara a general question. Okay, he said, he wrote. How does that commit him? Did he actually give something away? Did he give him a tana? No. He just said, I'm backing off. I'm disengaging. Suppose he wrote, okay, din, udvarim, etc. How does that have any effect? You have two partners in a field. Reuven turns to Shimon, his partner. You know, I have nothing to do with this field. That's it. I'm not involved anymore. I'm backing off. It doesn't work. Why? Did he give it away? Did he say, I'm giving it to you as a matana? No. I'm backing off. Okay. That has no legal effect. Here as well. Just because he said, I'm backing off from these properties, he has a schus, he has a right. A financial holding here. He can't just give it up unless he gives it to her directly. So how does it work? The Gemara is assuming he is already married, in which case he already acquired that right. He has access. So unless he actually transfers and gives it away, he can't just say, I'm backing off. Amrit v'Rabbi Yami. In the base medrash of Rabbi Yami, they explained, no, we're not speaking about a married husband. Because of law. You know when he committed this? V'oida arusa, while engaged. So he gave it to her while she was still engaged, in which case he preempted the upcoming zechus. He sidestepped the halacha. He's not going to accept this field. He's not going to accept this chus upon marriage. Kid Rav Kahana, as Rav Kahana tells us, Damar Rav Kahana, you can do that. If you're doing it in advance. If you already have it, you have to actually give it away. But if you haven't yet acquired it, you can sort of shut the door and prevent it from coming in. The Amar of Ghana. A person's about to marry. And he's going to promise his future wife that any inheritance that she gets stays by her. He can do that because it's still pre-marriage. And he hasn't yet acquired that zechus. Nachla haba la'adam imakim acher. There's an inheritance arriving from elsewhere, meaning not by way of a natural relative, but by way of a wife. In which case, it's your masa, your marriage, your doing, which creates that zechus, which allows you access to her Yerusha. So it's only the Rabbanon, right, that we give him that Yerusha. You can turn it down in advance. Adam masna alea shula Yerushana. You have the ability to condition, to stipulate in advance. I don't want it. Ukad Rava, as Rava gives us another example of a person turning down an offer. Offered to him by the Chacham, to his benefit. He says, look, I'm not interested. Thank you so much. No thanks. You can do that. Ukad Rava, Dama Rava, Ha'imer, E. F. Shibet, Hakanis Chachamim. Person says, you know, I'm okay without this takanas chachamim, which was stipulated and established for my benefit. You can do that. Kigoyin Zu, for instance, the following case, we'll see in a minute. Shemile, we accept it. He has a right to do that. My Kigoyin Zu, what is this specific takanas chachamim that a person can turn down? K'drafuna marav. We know that the chachamim, in order to ensure that a wife is properly looked after, they obligated the husband to feed her in exchange for taking her income. So whatever she brings in goes to the husband, and she gets fed. Let's say she says, look, I'm a high earner. I don't need his income, his provisions. I'll just keep my earnings. Let him keep his. You can do that, because after all, it was said for her benefit. A woman could turn to her husband and say, you know, I don't need his mizoynus, and I will not transfer my income to him. You can do that here as well. My husband could choose and just do away with the zechus that we're giving him and his wife, nechse melug, provided it was done in advance. Why? If that's the case, afilu nesu nami. So even once married, why can't you just turn it down? Amar Abaye, nesua? No, yada ki yada. His hand and her hand are equal, meaning they both have equal rights and a hold in this property. It's like he's a partial owner, so to speak. They're like partners. So once he acquired those rights, you can't just relinquish without a proper kinyan, without properly transferring it to somebody else. You can't just back up and say, look, I'm not interested. Rava Amar Yada Yadifa Miyada. Actually, his ownership, so to speak, his chus is superior to hers. Nafkimina L'Shemeres Yavim. This would be a ramification regarding the halacha of Shemeres Yavim. It's actually a whole long sheet, a whole long sugya in Yavames. It depends how we treat the zechus of the husband. Is it considered equal to the wife or superior to the wife? So discussion there is about an isha who's a Shemeres Yavam, meaning she's a Yavama. What happens to her assets if she passes away? Machlekes b'sham b'yis Hillel. So the two ways to learn the machlekes, according to Abaye, it's based on the fact that a married husband and wife have equal rights to the properties. And according to Rava, his is greater than hers. But bottom line is, it doesn't really have any effect on our sugi here. Bottom line is, all agree that a husband is at least, equal in terms of a balim on the nichsei melog, because he has pay raise rights, etc. That's already partially in his possession, in which case he can't just relinquish and forfeit by saying, dinu dvarim, I'm not interested. So how does it work in our Mishnah? Because he did it by oida rusa, while engaged. So he sort of shut the door and did not accept the schos that was offered to him upon marriage. But, suppose we're speaking about regular partners. Reuben and Shimon, who jointly own a property, unless he actually gives it away to Shimon, nothing happens. So if he says, dinu dvarim, I'm not interested in this field that I already own, null and void, has no meaning. Here comes the question. Iboilu, the Bnei Yeshiva asked the kash, kano miyadei mao. Suppose Reuben tells Shimon, dinu dvarim, ein li al sodezu. So that's a Lashon Geruah, it's an inferior expression. It doesn't really denote granting, gifting, or matana. So it doesn't really work. But kanu miyadimau, let's say they made a kinyan with each other, a kinyan chalipin, he took a handkerchief, and in exchange he tells him, dinu dvarim, I will not interact with, I'm totally backing off from this property. Perhaps this changes the equation. Why? So we have machlekes. Amar Rav Yosef, dinu dvarim kanu miyadim, even though they made a kinyan, doesn't matter. So you made a kinyan on this weak expression, on this non-committal, or I should say this, non-halachically committing expression. Doesn't commit him halachically, just saying, I have nothing to do with the field. Maybe it means I have nothing to do with you, I'm not going to fight with you about it. But he's still owning it. So the kinyan doesn't really add much. It just strengthens a non-commitment. Rav Nachman Amar, no. A kinyan typically involves an asset, a tangible, being. Migufa shel karka kano miyadu. The fact that he made a kinyan indicates that it's a real matana. I'm actually giving you part of my field. So the machlokes in Rav Yosef says, it doesn't really make a difference whether or not he made a kinyan on top of this expression of dinu dvarim ein le'asod azu. Rav Nachum says the kinyan sort of changes the equation. Amar Abaye mistavra milsad Rav Yosef. This approach, this Rav Yosef's approach, that kinyan doesn't really change the equation, is probable. Makes sense. Ba'irir. When Reuben, who made this whole deal, he expressed and he made a kinyan, is coming right back and complaining. Shimon, you're taking my part. I never meant to give it to you. I just said, you know, dinu dvar mainly. I'm not going to fight with you about it. But a present, never. So that makes sense. If he's coming right back and complaining. So it indicates that he's, you know, he's legitimately complaining. Aval ba'imid. But suppose he just stood around for a day or two, quietly, and suddenly he shows up and he's complaining. Oh, that's not a good sign. It indicates that maybe perhaps somebody coached him. And now he's having a change of heart. He actually gave it away, but now he's changing his mind. In this case, migufa shel karka kono miyadai, we assume that the kinyan was a proper kinyan, and he gave it away. Amar Amemer, what is the halacha? Hilchasa migufa shel karka kono miyadai. In fact, when he makes a kinyan, it's a complete transfer. Amar Ravashi l'Amemer. So Ravashi asked him, which case are we speaking? Ba'erer, when he came back to complain right away, or if it took him a while as well. When do we say that it's considered a transfer? L'maynaf kamina, why are you asking this question? Look at Rav Yosef, right? So he said, well, you know, there's a shitas Rav Yosef who holds that even a kinyan under these circumstances has no meaning, right? Because the kinyan is just certifying and confirming a shaky expression. And this was Abaye's explanation that you know, when he comes back and complains right away, that gives him credibility. But if he, you know, took him a while to come back, well, then we question his integrity. So when you said that the kinyan creates a transfer, what do you mean? When he comes back, after a while, or even if he comes back to complain right away. Amr leis, so Amemer says, leis merely, I never heard that distinction between right away or later. Kalemer meaning, leis merely, I don't really subscribe to that opinion at all. Meaning, I don't hold like Rav Yosef, I hold like Rav Nachman. If it's a kinyan, that creates a proper transfer. You only make a kinyan on a field. Rashi said he made a chalipin, which means he took an item from the partner in exchange for his portion of the field. That's a proper kinyan. It's totally his. Let's go back to the Mishnah. We started with a fellow who actually committed, either verbally or in writing to his wife, look, I have nothing to do with your fields. What does the Mishnah say? He didn't give it up. The only thing he gave up was that now his wife can actually has a right to actually sell the field. But everything else he holds on to, he gets Paris, it's considered his Yerusha down the road. Imkein lamakasa l'chu. Question is why? Why does he retain two out of three benefits? V'teimale, she can tell him, you gave up everything. All three. Mikol, milis, likas, nafshach. He gave up all three benefits. No Paris, no Yerusha, I can go and sell it. So why is it only limited to her right of sale? Amar Abaye, well, yad ba'al hashtar ala tachtoina. A person's holding a document which contains vague language. Like over here, he says, Dinu dvarim ein li b'nechasayach. I'm backing off from these properties. How? What? When? He didn't really detail it. So the person holding that document has to prove his case. And unless he proves, unless he can substantiate what he's claiming, he gets the least of the. He gets the yad ala tachtoina, his hand on the bottom, meaning he's at a disadvantage. And therefore we say that the only thing the wife will get, it's not clear what he gave up. The only thing she'll get is the item of least value. She gets back her right to sell the field, which at the Gemara at this point figures is the least valuable of all three benefits. Well, ve'ema mipeir. Why are you considering mechira as the least valuable of all the rights? If anything, right of sale allows her to sell the entire karak and get rid of it. That's pretty severe. That's a pretty serious right. Maybe he didn't mean to give that up. He meant to give up the Peres, which does not really involve such a major loss on his part, compared to losing the entire field. Amar Abaye, you know how people are. Boitzina, tav mikara. Rashi learns that Boitzina is a small pumpkin, Kra is a large pumpkin. A person would rather take a Boitzina right now, even though it's just small and flimsy, than wait and wait patiently till the Kara grows and develops and matures and ripens. It's here, it's now, it's tangible, let me have it. Peres are here, predictable, it's immediate benefit. He's not willing to give that up. Rather, he'd rather give up the give her the right to sell a field, which is unlikely to happen that she'll actually sell the field. Maybe she will, maybe she won't. I'm willing to risk that in order to get the Peres on a regular basis. So in his mind, Mechira is the least valuable of all benefits, and that's what he's relinquishing. Maybe he's relinquishing the Yerusha rights. Because look, that's in the bottom of the scale. That's the most unlikely scenario. That she'll die during his lifetime, he'll take it from her. So that's far-fetched. It's the most unlikely of all three benefits. Maybe that's the thing he's giving up. Amar Abaye, Misa Shchicha, unfortunately death is common. So it's not the most unlikely of all benefits. Mechira L'Shchicha, as opposed to selling, that's actually not so common, not so likely, Rashi says. And Isha wouldn't sell her family estate. And therefore, v'chima salik inish nafshe. We assume that when a person is backing away and forfeiting rights, it's from the most, you know, the least valuable and the most unlikely aspect of his benefits. That's when he's backing off from something which is uncommon, unlikely to happen, as opposed to masalik inish nafshe, something which is common and relevant and tangible, such as Yerusha. He'd rather not give that up. So if it's a question of, you know, which one of these three benefits he's giving up, we assume it's the Mechira rights. Rav Ashi Omar, I'll give you a more basic, simple, direct pshat, why he gave up the right of blocking the sale as opposed to everything else. Take a look at what he wrote. He says, Dinu dvarim ein li b'nichsayich. I'm backing off from your properties. From an aspect of your property. B'nichsayich v'lei b'perisein, unrelated to the Peres. I'm not giving up Peres, I'm giving up some right within the property, the right of sale. Likewise, b'nechasayich, he said, from your properties. V'lo lachamisa, he's not speaking about after death, such as Yerusha. So the actual wording of the shtar indicates that he meant to give up the mechira rights. So first generation produce, he gave up. But second generation produce, he's holding on to. What does that mean, second generation produce? Tanu rabbanan, Elohim peris, what's considered first level Peres, ve'elohein Peres, what is considered second generation Peres? It's as follows. Hichnisa loy karka, she brought him a field, v'asa Peres, which produced fruit, harein Peres, that's considered first generation produce. What happens if machar Peres, v'lokach men karka, he took the Peres, purchased field, he reinvested it, v'asa sa Peres, and that produced again, harein Peres, that's called second generation Peres. Iboilu, now go back to the Mishnah. Mishnah says, according to Yehuda, you don't give up Peres Peres unless you specify. What do you specify? So Yehuda used the words of Lo'ilum Eichel Peres Peres, he'll get Peres Peres unless he writes as follows. I'm backing off from Yenachasim, Ube Peres Sein, Ube Peres Peres Sein, Ad Olam. So the question is, do we need the entire Nusach to accomplish what we're trying to do? The question is like this. Rabbi Yehuda, peri peri stafka. What's the main, you know, element of expression here? The peri peris, oydil ma'ad oylum dafka, or is the most crucial part of that expression the term ad oylum? I'm giving it up forever. So is it this or that? Oydil matarvayu dafka, or perhaps both aspects of this expression are necessary. He has to say Peres Peres, I'm giving up. He has to say Adayim, I'm giving up. So is it this, that, or both? And the more explains. Intim Tzalaymar Peres Peres Dafka. If you'll tell me that the only thing, the only critical part of this expression is he should say Peres Peres to give that up. Adayim Lamli. So why did Rabbi Yehuda even mention Adayim? It wasn't necessary. Oh, HaKamashmon. Rabbi Yehuda was trying to teach us a chiddush. Kiven the Kasa La Peres Peres. The very fact that he actually wrote that expression, Peres Peres, has the same weight and benefit and effect. Come on, the cost of La Adoylam Dami says, oh, he wrote Adoylam. He doesn't have to go Peris, just list it out. Once he says Peris, it's understood that he meant endlessly. Okay, so that's one possibility, that Peris is the real expression. On the other hand, if Adoylam is the critical expression, then peri peri slumly. Why at all do you just say peri peris if it's not really necessary for the halach? Kamash one is trying to teach us, afagav the kosel of peri peris. That even in the case we actually wrote peri peris, that's not enough. It costs of la adoylam in. Unless they added the words adoylam, then it works. Iloi, but otherwise it doesn't work loy. So that was a chiddush. Adoylam is the crucial part of that expression. Peri peris is not sufficient. Continues the Gemara. V'intim Suleimar Tarvayu Dafka. Suppose you'll tell me both expressions are necessary. He has to say Peri Peris. He has to say Adoylam. Then Tarti Lomli. How do you explain why he needs both? Tzricha, each one is a chiddush. Each one is necessary. Each one sort of shores up for the other one. The Yikas of La Peri Peris. Had he only have written the words Peri Peris, V'lo Yikas of La Adoylam, without adding the words Adoylam, Hav Amina, perhaps I would say Peri Peris Adlo Yachil. He's giving up the second generation Peris, Aval Pera de Peri Peris, Acha, but the third one down the line he'll still have. Lachi, it's Trich Adoylam, that's why he had to add the words Adoylam, forever. On the other hand, because of La Adoylam, had he only written Adoylam, but because of La Peri Peris, without writing the other part, Havamina, I would say like this, listen to this, Loylam, when he said Adoylam, it means like this, A Peris Kai, it means the first generation produce. I'm not going to have the apples that grow off your field, whether it's this year's crop, or the apples that grow next year, or the year after, but we're speaking about first generation produce directly from the field. But Peri Peris, I want to have that. Lachi Istrich Peri Peris, that's why he had to add the words Peri Peris to indicate that it's an ongoing thing. First generation, second generation fruit. And not only that, I'm not stopping there. I said Ad Olam. That is second, third, fourth, endlessly. I'm giving it a lot. So the Gemara pretty much left off with a question mark. The words Peris, according to Rabita, doesn't cover everything. You have to add. But what do you have to add? Peri Peris? Or Ad Olam? Or perhaps both? Here comes another question. Iboilu. So they asked as follows. Kos havlo dinu dvorim ein li b'nechas sayich. Suppose he writes it out. I'm disengaging from your properties and from the peri-peris, the grandchildren. But he didn't make any mention of the original fruit. Mao sheyoichal peris. Could he have the first generation peris? So I know you'll ask a question. Well, if he's going to have the first peris, then you'll never get the peri-peris. The Gemara will ask soon. The Gemara will say, well, maybe he left some over. And that was reinvested, and that Peri Peris he won't have. Okay, but that's an interesting question. When he writes Peri Peris, did he purposely omit Peris because he wants them? Or is it sort of all included? Mi Peri Peris Solik Nafshi. Did he disengage from the second generation Peris? Mi Peri Loi Solik Nafshi. Not from first generation. Or perhaps, Mi Kol Mili Solik Nafshi. He's disengaged from everything. It's included. Says the Gemara, of course. Pshita de Mi Kol Mili Solik Nafshi. It's pretty obvious. It's totally out of there. Why? Because it can't happen otherwise. And these amris mi peri peri solik nafshi. Because if you'll suggest that he's disengaged from peri peris, but not from peris, so how do you ever get the peri peris if he already ate the peris? Mi peri solik nafshi, and he did not disengage from the peris, he'll have that. Well, once you have that, there's nothing left to produce the next generation. Given the achlinu la peris, once he had the first generation peris, peri peris mecha, when do you get to the second generation? One second, says the Gemara. According to your way of thinking, I have another question for you. Remember the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Hodas nan Rabida Aymer. La'ilum wa'ichel Peri Peris. Rabida maintains that Peri Peris always belong to him unless he specifically referred to them. Right? So, we're speaking about the fellow who disengaged. Dinu dvarim, right? I have nothing to do with your properties. He loses the first Peris, but he gets the second Peris. How could you ever get to the second if she ate the first? Kirin the achlinu la peri, once she had the first peris, peri, peris mecha, how do you ever get to the second generation peri? there's nothing to replant, to reinvest. So basically, a similar kasha that you had on my, you know, question here. How do you get to grandchildren? If you have no children, you could ask on the Mishnah itself. How could she have the children and him the grandchildren? So we're speaking that she left something over. She's entitled to the peris. She happened to leave something over, and that was reinvested, and you get peri peris. And that he has a right to access. Hachanami b'dashayir, same thing over here. He wrote, I'm disengaging from the grandchildren, but I want the children. Right? Maybe. That was my question. Right? Did he mean to include the children, or does he get the first generation peers? Well, he asked me a question. If he gets the first, how do you ever get to number two? He left some over, and you got to the second generation, and then he's giving to her. So we left that at a question mark. Right? In the case we wrote, peri-peris, does that include the peris as well? Or does he want to hold on to the peris? Back to the Mishnah. In case number three, he gave everything away, all three benefits, peris, mechira, and yerusha. Rabban Shimon Gamliel disagrees. He says, no, you can't do that. Rabban Shimon Gamliel Omer v'chul Amar Rab, halacha, could Rabban Shimon Gamliel be paskin like him? You can't give up the Yerusha right, but v'loy mitameh. It's not because of Rabban Shimon Gamliel's reason, because of a different reason, explains the Gemara. My halacha, could Rabban Shimon Gamliel v'loy mitameh. What did he mean that we follow the Shita? Based on a different reason. Shall we say like this? Halacha Karaban Shimon Gamliel. In principle, we follow his shita. The Amar, he said, he may say Yerushena. Even if she passes away, he gets the Yerusha. V'lav mitamei, but not for the same reason. The Ilu Rabban Shimon Gamliel Sovar. The reason why he held that he could not relinquish the Yerusha rights, it's because Masna Amasha Kasa Baturit Noi Batal. When a person makes a condition which sort of opposes a din in the Torah, in this case, the din Yerusha that a husband is entitled to from his wife's, you know, properties, you can't go against that. So it's batel. That's his shit. V'rav savar t'noi kaim. But Rav, on the other hand, although he agrees in concept, not in concept, in practice, that the husband cannot give up the Yerusha, it's not because of this reason, that it's been a Torah, you can't go against it. No, t'noi kaim. The truth is you can make it t'nai. Even though it involves Din Torah. Rashi explains, because when it comes to financial matters, you can rearrange things. You can make a Tanai, even though the Torah grants you certain rights and privileges. After all, it's financial rights and privileges. You can rearrange and forfeit. You can do that. The problem here is, because Rav holds, Yerusha is Habal Derabbanan. Actually, the reason why your husband is Yerush, it's Mid Derabbanan. It's not Mana Torah. V'chachamim asu chizuk l'devreyam yoisim mishal Torah. Because it's Rabbanan, that is the very reason why you can't go against it. Chachamim knew that, you know, there's a tendency, perhaps, to negate, to neglect, to take the Divrei Chachamim lightly. They made a chizuk, they reinforced the Din Rabbanan, even more than a Din Torah. A Din Torah allows it tonight. A Din Rabbanan does not allow it tonight. And therefore, you cannot give up your Yerusha rights. Now, Tosis points out, well, if we're not allowing it tonight by Yeshus the Rabbana, like Yerusha, so there goes the whole sugya. How could a person give up the peiros, which are also given to him at the Rabbana? So he says peiros is not such a common thing. Apparently, it wasn't so common to have nechsem. But look, and peiros, even though we learned a lot about it, apparently it wasn't a daily occurrence, as opposed to Yerusha, which is more common, he says. Typically, an Isha has a dowry, and that is something which goes over to the husband upon her death. So to go against that takana, to make it tonight, to give up that takana, that was not acceptable and that was not allowed. And we'll continue the sugi b'ez Hashem tomorrow. Let's recap today's daf. So we have three cases. A fellow commits, either verbally or in writing, regarding his wife's nichsem luk. I'm disengaging from your nechasim. In this case, all he forfeited were the mechira rights, his right to block her sale. That's it. If he added that I'm disengaging from your peris, he disengaged from that as well. According to Rabbi Yehuda, second generation peris are still his unless he stipulates. We had a question how to stipulate whether it's saying this, that, or both together. He said, I'm not engaging with your properties, whether in your lifetime or after death. He gives up Yerusha as well. According to Rav Shimon Gamliel, you can never give that up. The question was, how could he even, you know, use this language to forfeit any rights? Dinu Dvarim, it's not a Lashon of Mechira or Matana. The answer is, he did it before the marriage. He preempted the arrival of his chos, and you could do that, especially when we're speaking about a din derabbanan, which was enacted for his benefit. As opposed to two partners who own a property, using this language would not create any transfer of property, and according to the Maskana of the Gemara, even if there was a kinyan to certify this commitment. We had a question, let's say he writes, I'm giving away the pair of Paris. Does that include the Paris or not? We left it as a shot. All the best to you and Hatzlacha Rabbah.